America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Final hour, fist pump time. Feels like the week is flying by for us. Hopefully it is for you as well. Thanks for being a Tolo on the Fan Cam, Twitch, YouTube, Odyssey app, listening on the original radio. Sean Sharif, RJ Choppy, Cowboys insider Bobby Belt, and Pepe getting in the back, live on the Fan Cam, Twitch, and YouTube. The history of these two legendary franchises at 9:20. A little history lesson with Bobby Roberto Belt. We'll crosstalk with the KMC Masterpiece at 9:40. Let's knock out rest of the NFL real quick before we get to politics, maybe affecting the Dallas Mavericks. We got Thursday night football this evening, and it is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Atlanta Falcons. Coming up this weekend, it's going to be Buffalo against Houston. Stephon Diggs explaining the divorce to some degree from Buffalo. But before that, we know that the Cowboys are not getting Devontae. We're waiting for a Jets trade to take place. Brandon Cooks is out. Babe Laufenberg just said twice, you can forget about any reunion between the Dallas Cowboys and Amari Cooper. Forget about that. You have anything else you'd like to add before I move on there?
We've talked a little bit about the idea of there might be too much history there. And Babe seems pretty confident that that history is going to get in the way. Now, I think it's, my question would be, whose history? Like, is that Amari not wanting to be here? Or is that Mike not wanting him here? Or Jerry not wanting him here? That you guys knew before he got traded, I know, that there were tension points his last year here that you guys had heard about separately, because I remember we had those conversations. And so it definitely existed. Amari butted heads with people a lot here. Sanjay Lal and him did not get along when Sanjay Lal was the receivers coach. That's part of why Lal got fired. And so they've had tense issues, and it doesn't surprise me that they may say, we just want to not circle back on that.
Tim Collins, just let me know. We have Tony Dungy for tomorrow at 8 o'clock.
Ooh.
So, well. Mike McCarthy, Tony Dungy, picks, State Fair tickets, Nick Eatman.
I'm going to ask Dungy, I'm going to say, is McCarthy running the same exact offense you were defending 20 years ago?
Boy. Why is Tyreek Hill answering questions about going back to Kansas City? And let's just have fun with that for a second.
They left on good terms. He wanted a new deal, and they said, no, we're going to trade you. We're not going to pay you. And they worked with him to get him to a place that he wanted to go.
Didn't it feel like he was taking some subtle shots at, like, Mahomes, like Tua versus Mahomes? What would the cost be for Tyreek?
Man, more than Devontae.
Obviously.
A first?
Oh, yeah.
I would guess. Like, roughly a first. I mean, look,
and he wants a new deal. For the record, he has been talking about wanting to stay in Miami. If I'm the Dolphins, I'm making him untouchable. He's basically untouchable. Because I just re-signed Tua, and I re-signed McDaniel. I just need a healthy quarterback for what I view as still the most dangerous weapon in football.
It's not a great answer, though, from Tyreek when he's like, pressed on it and said, you know, oh, what about the idea of going back to the Chiefs? And he doesn't give you a firm no. Like, if CD would have answered a question this way, or if Brandon Cooks, anybody here would have answered a question this way, I think we'd all be like, that's certainly not the way you answer a question about wanting to be here or wanting to be somewhere else.
I didn't hear it, but I read it and I was fine with it. There were two parts to it. The first part, he didn't even suggest leaving there. He said, I want to be here, but it is a business, and, you know, he is looking for a new deal as well.
Yeah, and I mean, they worked his deal a little bit. They guaranteed more of his money this offseason, so they did adjust it a little bit, and he seemed happy with that. But it's like, when the first question comes out, I feel like most players are going to shoot it down and say, no, like, just nope, not going to go there. When he says, you know what, man, I'm just focused on right here and right now, then that seems a little impermanent to me. And even if he says, I love Miami and all these things, but you know what? It's a business, so who knows? That's just not the answer I think you want for somebody that's under contract.
If I told you, RJ, that it was a 1-4 for Tyreek.
I would have no problem do. I would absolutely do that for Tyreek. I would do a 1-4 for Tyreek than before I would do just a 4 for Devontae Adams.
Oh my goodness! Wow,
we're talking about literally the best. We're talking about the best receiver in football. It's Tyreek Hill.
You're talking about a skill set that is more likely to diminish with his age than the skill sets guys like Adams.
You know what? I disagree.
I would love to hear why.
Bigger-bodied wide receivers decline at a faster rate than the small, quick guys.
Bigger-bodied wide receivers who lean on physicality and some of the other things, yes. Somebody like Devontae Adams, who's route technician and just really, really polished, that tends to live on a little longer.
I view Tyreek, let me get the ages here.
Tyreek, Devontae's going to be 32 on Christmas Eve.
Right, but... like, I look at Tyreek much more like Antonio Brown. If Antonio Brown had a clear mind, I think Antonio Brown could legitimately still play in the NFL.
But again, Brown to me was a guy who Antonio Brown was a technician. Like Brown, Brown was like really clean, and Tyreek is really agile and does. But Tyreek's biggest asset is just speed. his speed, for sure. his natural ability. It's not necessarily like he's like a super strong technician.
He's not like Antonio Brown from a pure tactical standpoint, but I don't see the speed slowing down at all, and you're 2 years shy of Devontae.
I mean, if I'm contending, I'm trading for him. I am doing that, but it's because I'm contending and I want something to happen now.
What's Stephon Diggs saying about the divorce?
So, Stephon Diggs, over at ESPN, Jeremy Fowler had a breakdown of the Stephon Diggs Buffalo Bills divorce. And a lot of this was related to conversations that Fowler was having with people inside of Buffalo and getting some of their thoughts on and off the record. But, you know, some of this stuff that we had heard before felt like we kind of knew, some of the tension between him and Allen, obvious. But one team source had said in Buffalo that Stephon Diggs is a tremendous player, but they reached a point where the offense didn't need him anymore. And oddly enough, the team responsible for Stephon Diggs no longer being in Buffalo is your Dallas Cowboys. That when the Cowboys went out there and just got destroyed by the Buffalo Bills last year, in a game where Diggs had 4 catches for 48 yards on 5 targets, was not the biggest part of it. A team source who was on the scene that night said about Diggs, for a while it was no way we can play without this dude. And that night we thought, oh, maybe we can do this without him.
After he had 4 for 48?
4 for 48, which early in the game he wasn't involved a ton. But they really didn't need to throw the ball a ton. And when you look at how we talked about Buffalo ran their offense earlier this year, I remember first 2 weeks you were talking about that, Sean, where it's like Josh Allen is not being asked to do a whole lot right now. That was exactly what they did that day. Josh Allen didn't beat you. It was James Cook and the Bills running game, the way they kind of facilitated things. And so that looks like exactly how they played it out. But basically what this came down to was last December when they went on their run, they, for the first time in Diggs' time in Buffalo, felt like, we can do this without him. We've got evidence now we can do it, so the headache's no longer worth it. Let's push him out.
NFL thinking of, and how are we feeling, by the way, about early Houston returns on Diggs? He scored a few times I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, when I've popped in and watched him, he still looks like Stephon Diggs. I haven't noticed him being as much of a factor, obviously, as what like Nico Collins does for them right now.
NFL trying to screw around with the kickoff again?
Andrew Siciliano posted on Twitter that Roger Goodell told Good Morning Football that moving the dynamic kickoff touchback to the 35-yard line, quote, would be a game changer right away. And it's more of a matter of when, not if, it's going to happen. He didn't suggest a midseason change, said offseason, but the competition committee will meet soon to discuss. Also, the Washington Post is talking about this, the 35-yard line. Just stop farting around with this thing. Like, nobody cares. You're trying to bring back a play that had such a small chance of success, but also had far too big of a risk for the kicking team. to have them put it in play. Moving that kickoff 5 yards, 5 yards does not matter in a passing league. I've always said, and I don't know when coaches will figure it out, taking a timeout as opposed to a delay of game penalty is such a misappropriation of such valuable resources.
Hmm.
Take the 5 yard penalty.
So third and 10 to third and 15.
Yeah. Now, if it's fourth and inches
yeah.
versus fourth and five, and you're down three with, you know, time, you know, in the fourth quarter, okay, fine. You know, take the penalty. Or, take the timeout. But, you know, between the first and the fourth quarter, if you're just take the penalty. You know, just take the, because you're misappropriating the resources. Timeouts are like outs in baseball. You got a precious few. You can make up 5 yards. Shoot, get a defensive holding call. There's a million things you can do. But moving the kickoff 5 yards, I don't know. If you're going to move it to the 50, a touchback to the 50, then you're going to see teams kicking into play.
But Belichick had just said, just back up the kickoff even more.
Put it to the 20.
So you get your return.
Yeah, put it to the 20.
That's honestly the biggest thing. And the biggest thing to the NFL is they don't want no wasted plays. They don't want people tuning out for anything. Yeah. And so that's why they changed extra points. That's why they're trying to fix this.
Luka Doncic suffering a left half contusion will be reevaluated in 1 week as Frank Vogel joins the Mavericks coaching staff. So I think they were together previously in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. So now they are reunited yet again. And the Mavericks had a team dinner at Miriam Adelson. Which one are we going with?
I've heard Adelson. Some people say Adelson. I've heard Adelson only.
I've heard both, but yeah, I've been saying Adelson.
They had a team dinner at the new Mavs owner's home on Wednesday night, according to Jason Kidd. And now, I think as Kevin Hagelin walks in the conference room, politics.
That's right. Clay Thompson, by the way, I saw his quote from that little party. Talked about he was very impressed with all the artwork she had hanging in the palatial estate there.
What about the Trump sign out front?
I don't know. He didn't comment on that part of it. But Dallas Morning News had a write-up earlier this week kind of talking about...
I got a Trump no fear sign on one of the roads going to my house. And I'm like, what is the no fear?
I got a Harris Billabong sign down the street. Then I see...
Over at the Dallas Morning
News. Waltz, Abercrombie, and Fitch around the corner, too.
Over at the Dallas Morning News, they did a breakdown of something that we've all kind of noticed and talked about, which is the clear political differences that exist between Mark Cuban and Patrick Dumont and Miriam Adelson and where their political leanings lie. So Cuban has been one of the more prominent, outspoken people in sports about Trump. And his
every
disagreements
day.
With him.
Every yep. day, him and Elon.
Not a fan.
Just,
not a fan.
Yeah, just destroying him consistently. And Adelson is...
After originally saying he would be his VP.
Yeah, initially he liked that he was shaking things up, yep. and that shifted pretty quickly. Adelson is obviously a massive mega donor. She's poured a lot of money here into the state of Texas before she ever bought the Dallas Mavericks. But she owns 69% of the Mavericks.
Yeah, nice.
There you go. And it's caused a little bit of consternation, obviously, or publicly it looks like it's caused consternation with the fact that Cuban is endorsing Kamala Harris and has said a lot of really aggressive things about Donald Trump. Well, Cuban was asked by the Dallas Morning News about some of these disagreements and have these gotten in the way of business, and he just kind of shrugged it off. It was like, no, we haven't had any issues at all. In fact, we just talk about basketball like we have for my decade knowing them. We just talk about basketball. That's all it's ever about. We don't have these sort of discussions, and we don't let that get in the way. Patrick Dumont had talked about, I think we just operate to be successful, talking about the way they're running the Mavericks right now with their political questions and everything else. He said, I think people have views that they have, and you can listen to them, and those views are their views, but I think these organizations last through politics. So they're all kind of discounting it, thinking not a very big deal. But to me, the more you look at it laid out, just how deep both of them are into their political leanings. This is going, this can't last.
Well, isn't Cuban eventually going
to
be out?
Yeah, he's supposed to have a sunset date. They've already apparently removed, it feels like, a lot of his power. I mean, he's kind of running basketball ops right now, but it definitely feels like if this were to go on more than 5-6, if it goes into another election cycle 4 years from now, I'd be stunned if we see the end of that.
Well,
working out positively.
It's a novel concept, but people used to work together and have relationships with people of the other political belief. It's amazing how we just forgot to do that. But also, Mark Cuban isn't heavily, I don't believe, as leaned into the left as the Adelsons are to the right. Cuban's leaned in against one person. Cuban has said he's like conservative from a money standpoint.
Fiscally.
But I mean, he socially, you know, he leans to the left, you know, pretty hard lean. Like, I don't think Mark Cuban is one or the other. I think he's just against one person.
This is what he closed. This was the last line he left. This is the last line he left the morning news with. He said, "I always remember I'm an American first. This is Mark Cuban, first and last. When Trump won in 2016, I helped him with healthcare, PPE, dealing with issues during the pandemic. I was proud I could help. I couldn't care less about parties. I'm an independent and wish all parties went away. I care about this country and what I can do to make it better."
Who do you think is disliked amongst our listening audience more right now today between Cuban or Jerry?
Jerry. Because I think Jerry's disliked by 100% and Cuban's disliked by
50%.
Okay.
Cuban is the intensity of the Cuban dislike is very strong in that 50%, though.
Yeah.
For a lot of reasons.
What should we know about the history of the Cowboys and the Steelers? That's next in Below the Belt on 105.3 The
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
The great Bobby Belt.
Bobby Belt is an idiot.
Don't make me take off my belt.
We're not. Over to you, Bobby.
Let's take a look back at one of the greatest rivalries in the history of the NFL. Below the Belt, presented by A Number One Air. Before we take a look back and kind of establish why the Cowboys-Steelers rivalry is what it is this the best uniform matchup in the NFL? Like just the clean Steelers Cowboys look.
I'm a uniform guy. I'm a uniform nerd.
I love the Chargers uniforms.
Chargers are good.
It's good. You could tell the my one issue with the Chargers uniforms, you could tell it's very AFL-y. You know, they had the crazy colors.
Yeah.
Chiefs, same
thing.
That's
history, though.
It's history.
People would throw Raiders into this mix.
Oh, yeah. That, to me, is the best
one. Oh, yeah.
One.
Good uniforms. Yeah. I just mean it's like a match of, like, just the clean look of those two uniforms against each other. The black and gold, and then the Cowboys classic, like, silver-blue look. It's just, I love this one. All right. The Cowboys and the Steelers, everybody knows three Super Bowls that they played against each other. It's the most common Super Bowl matchup in the history of the NFL. Nobody's played each other more than three times. A couple different ones have been twice. But you've never gotten the three-time matchup other than the Cowboys and the Steelers. But there's a lot of history outside of that, too. So the very first game, 1960, that the Cowboys ever played in the history of the franchise was against the Pittsburgh Steelers. It was at the Cotton Bowl on September 24th, 1960. And this was a winless first season for the Cowboys. They were absolutely terrible, but they almost won their very first game of the season.
Great uniforms, though, the white helmets.
Yeah, they were up 14-0 in this game. They were actually tied into the fourth quarter. They ultimately lose this one 35-28. And the thing that stung about this one most was it came at the hands of Bobby Lane, who was a Texas high school football legend and a legend at the University of Texas. He actually played at Highland Park High School. It was him and Doak Walker were the two teammates there at Highland Park. Mm. And he was considered just kind of a god around this area. And he played his ass off in this game. In fact, 1960, guys, these were some of the scoring plays in that first game. 75-yard touchdown pass, 70-yard touchdown pass, 54-yard touchdown pass, 49-yard touchdown pass, and the game winner of Bobby Lane, 65-yard touchdown pass. And so, a lot of throwing the ball around.
Kill to get that in today's NFL.
Yeah, no kidding.
Kill to get just one of those here in the current Dallas Cowboys. 1961, the next year, Cowboys win their very first game as a franchise. It's the first game of the season. It's against Bobby Lane and the Steelers. So, they end up getting a little bit of revenge there, able to kind of recycle, reset. And they win four games that year and start the trek of building what Tom Landry ultimately wanted to do with the Cowboys. Now, they end the 60s, 1969. They had started really handling the Steelers pretty easily by the mid-60s. Steelers were not very good by the end of the 60s. And the Cowboys beat the Steelers 10-7 in 1969. They won their fourth straight division title. Pittsburgh was terrible that year. So why does that matter? Well, it may have inadvertently set up the 1970s dynasty for the Steelers. Pittsburgh, with that loss, a game that they were very close in, it was one of the games they were actually competitive in at the end of the year. Pittsburgh loses this game. They finish the season with the same record as the Chicago Bears, who desperately needed a quarterback. Well, NFL league offices, they have a coin flip to see who gets the number one pick because Pittsburgh didn't have that victory against Dallas, finished with a tie. The coin flip lands in favor of the Steelers, and they go into the 1970 draft, and they select Terry Bradshaw, number one overall, and kind of set up their dynasty for the remaining years. The Bears with the number two pick, kind of feeling like, all right, there's not a quarterback here we want anymore. They trade out to the Packers, kind of move on. But Dallas, if they actually lose that game, if they're not able to finish that game off, a low-scoring game, then that's one where you probably don't see Terry Bradshaw playing for the Steelers. He's probably a Chicago Bears quarterback for the duration of the 70s.
Okay, they still would have won four titles.
Now, this is one of my favorite stories.
By the way, who was the fifth pick in that draft, Sean?
I have no idea. Give me a team.
Bills. And
Daryl Talley.
And that matters.
Juice.
Because he played a major... No. He played a major role with a former teammate of his that you just mentioned.
Do you know?
I have no idea.
Al Cowens.
Oh! So I was right. Juice.
Yeah, basically. 1973, this is one of my... They kind of get some revenge on the Bradshaw thing. This is one of my favorite stories that I've ever heard. I was interviewing Drew Pearson about 5-6 years ago. So he goes undrafted in 1973 out of Tulsa. And the thought was that he was going to sign with the Steelers. The Steelers were offering him the most money, were pursuing him hard, but it was a hard-charging push from the Cowboys that caused him to end up in Dallas for much less money. So Drew said that he's sitting there, it's near the end of the draft. He said after it was a 17-round draft, after round 12, he said he started just pounding Boone's Farm and was just depressed that he hadn't been picked. And he said Bob Griffin, an old scout from the Cowboys, called and said, couldn't believe you didn't get drafted. Would you meet me over in the mess hall? I want to talk to you about coming to the Cowboys. So he said, drunk off of Boone's Farm. He said, give me an hour. Let me just collect myself a little bit. Did, sobered up. Said he goes down to the cafeteria, meets up with him. They pitch him. He liked that Dallas came, met with him face-to-face, talked to him. The scout really pitched him well. The Steelers were offering a $1,500 bonus. That's all that was guaranteed. Dallas was offering $150. So Pittsburgh was literally offering 10 times more. And he told Bob Griffin, he said, if you pay me that bonus in cash right now, I will sign with the Cowboys.
Wow.
So he said Bob Griffin handed him 7 20s and a 10, and he decided to sign with the Cowboys because of that. Otherwise, it would have been Pittsburgh Steeler legend Drew Pearson.
No ATM. What if you didn't have the cash on you? Is he like, you follow me to the bank?
Man, I feel like back then everybody carried like $1,000 cash on them just because you had to.
Yeah.
Which
I need to do with Bank of America and what happened to me yesterday.
I didn't look. I was scared to look. I didn't want to see my account at zero.
Oh, I looked.
Yeah?
2 minus size. Just nothing.
Is it still like that?
No, it came back last night. No fear. I always feel like the bank is going to replenish me no matter what.
Yeah.
I'm glad I just didn't have any automatic bill pay happen yesterday.
That's what people in Greece thought a few years ago, too. 1976, Dallas and Pittsburgh meet in the Super Bowl for the first time. Dallas had won 7 straight matchups. This is the game that ultimately, realistically, put Lynn Swann in the Hall of Fame. Lynn Swann's career numbers don't match up, really. He had 2 insane catches in the first half of this game that were described as poetry in motion by sports writers after that. But this is something where Dallas was actually up in this game in the fourth quarter, 10-7, and then it just all fell apart. They had a blocked punt, resulted in a safety, made it 10-9. They kick a field goal to go ahead. Staubach comes back, and they had scored on a touchdown earlier in the game to Drew Pearson, and he tried to hit it again with them down 12-10. And Mike Wagner in the Steelers secondary recognized Pearson's route from earlier in the game, and he jumped it, and he picked it off, set him up for another score. Staubach said afterwards, he said it was our bread and butter play all season long. He said it was the first time all year that that play didn't work, and it had gotten picked off. He was picked off 3 times, fumbled 3 times, and sacked 7 times by the Steelers defense. They absolutely crushed
him. Let me tell you something about that Lynn Swann poetry in motion play.
God, do you hate the Steelers more than
so
anyone
bad.
Else?
They're so overrated. Yeah, here's why they're overrated.
There's got to be a reason.
Angry Jets fan.
There's such an inordinate amount of Steelers in the Hall of Fame versus Cowboys from the same decade. And none of them. I mean, Terry Bradshaw is such an awful quarterback. He's Joe Namath without the looks. All right.
You know?
And let me tell you something about Lynn Swann's catch, that one, the tip up in the air, the jump, all that is Brandon Ayuk's catch against a worst athlete. That's all that is.
It was
overrated.
It was the second best catch in that game. He had one on the sideline that was way more absurd, I thought, actually, and was actually a better catch. But you talk about Terry Bradshaw's smarts, a guy who agrees with you, is Thomas Hollywood Henderson, as we're resetting the Cowboys-Steelers history. 1979, Cowboys get a rematch in Super Bowl 13 against the Steelers, and Hollywood Henderson spends the entire week leading up to the game talking trash about Pittsburgh. He very famously says, Bradshaw's so dumb he couldn't spell cat if you spotted him the C and the A. And that was not the only thing he said that week. That's the memorable one, but the rest of that week, he called Jack Lambert, who was missing teeth up front, he called him Dracula all week when talking to the media. He talked about their tight end, Randy Grossman. He said about him, he's basically a backup who only plays when someone dies or breaks a leg or something. So Hollywood Henderson goes off. Hollywood actually explained this later. He said he blames Cowboys PR for his famous C and the A.
Fix that ass, Rich.
He said PR came to him and said, hey, do you know, they knew he was a trash talker, and they went up to him and they said, do you know, Bradshaw wanted to get into LSU, but his test scores weren't very good, so he only got into Louisiana Tech.
Dang.
And Hollywood had it in his mind. He's like,
behind Phil Robertson.
He's like, they screwed with me. They got with me there. Big game. This is one that unfairly people blame Jackie Smith for the drop in the end zone where they had to kick a field goal, made it 21-17.
Unfair.
Unfair, because this was the third quarter. They were down 35-17 with 3 minutes left in this game. That did not change the game. It looks closer on screen, but ultimately not what it is. Really quickly, let's finish up with one more here. Other stuff in here. Barry Switzer's first game was against the Steelers, everything. But 1996, the Cowboys get the Steelers in Super Bowl 30, looking to kind of exercise demons from the 70s. And this is a year where Dallas under Switzer, players will talk about it, they were not prepared. They were just incredibly talented, basically.
Yeah.
But this is one where they get up 13-0 on the Steelers, and then Pittsburgh really starts pushing them in the second half. They get a surprise onside kick in the fourth quarter. They make it 20-17. Lavon Kirkland sacks Troy Aikman.
Lavon Kirkland.
Get the ball back with 4 minutes left, and they've got a chance to drive and win this game. Pittsburgh had 10 more first downs in this game, picked up double the rushing yards, had the ball for longer, but they had 3 turnovers. The very famous interception to Larry Brown, the Neil O'Donnell throw where Andre Hastings ran the wrong route, and they won this game. And I talked to Darren Woodson about it, and he talked about how toxic that year was. And he gave an interesting perspective about 6 years ago when I spoke with him about how they all felt after actually winning that game.
At the end of that Super Bowl game, we finished that game, and we walk into a locker room, and I remember all the defensive backs, we had beers. Someone put beers on our chairs. And we're sitting in there, and it's myself, Brock Marion, Larry Brown. You know, I think Dion was somewhere, and he might have been doing some media stuff, but it was about 5 or 6 guys. And we're sitting there, man, and it wasn't a whole bunch of joy. It was, damn, I'm glad this is over with.
Mm. And Darren mentioned that that's when they all kind of knew this is coming to an end. Like, this was the game that kind of woke them up and made them say, you know what? We're not going to be able to sustain this.
Aikman has talked similarly about it.
It's rough. And you see in that game. But Cowboys-Steelers this Sunday night at 7 o'clock on NBC.
Well done. Bobby Belt. The history lesson on 105.3 The Fan. Do we have indisputable proof that RJ Choppy was right? We'll talk about it. With the KMC, you got to hear what I say first.
Okay.
With the KMC Masterpiece, Crosstalk is next.
Let's get you over to Boomer Jacks, your official game day headquarters and the place to watch all the action. It's a Thursday night. That means there's some football on. We got 55 straight days of football now, boys and girls. That's right. No more college or pro football. No more days off for 55 straight days. And you can go to Boomer Jacks and watch it all. That's right. Baseball postseason is happening. You got basketball starting. You got hockey starting. It's a great time. October's the best month. The weather's gorgeous. Spread on the patios at Boomer Jacks. $3 domestic drafts, $4 wells, $6 Tito's all day, every day. Boomer Jacks, your official game day headquarters. Find yours online, boomerjacks.com.
The pitch. He struck him out. And the Kansas City Royals move on
to the division series. This improbable season.
Baltimore Orioles are what now, Choppy?
They are, let's see, O in their last 11 games or something like that in the playoffs.
That's why they're called the O's.
Chokers.
Chokers.
That's the call from Sean McDonough on ESPN. The Kansas City Royals advance. The Detroit Tigers advance, and the Padres advance as well. We will have Milwaukee and the Mets tonight for Game 3 to decide. Crosstalk with the KM No C Masterpiece, Kevin Hagelin, Mikey Bassett. What's coming up on the program?
And Corey should be back tomorrow when we're at Buffalo Wild Wings in Keller. Right out of the gate, which, if any, players from the Steelers scare you? We got John Machota coming up at 10:20, and Gridiron's moving to 11 today.
What just happened with this out of studio conversation? You guys talking about us? Talking smack?
No, we're just talking baseball. We're talking, my 14-year-old has got some decisions to make. So we're just, I'm getting MLB's opinion on the matter.
And Mike, Matt, microphone.
Why couldn't that? I just don't understand why you had to walk outside for that.
I'll field this question.
Thank you, Hagee.
Mike does not care from multiple conversations in the same room that are crossed up.
He can't do it.
Done. I'm old enough now that I've decided I'm done with being in a room with two conversations happening at one time. Either we're going to be quiet until Bobby's done talking, or we're gonna leave the room and have another conversation. I can't. My ears can't take that happening.
What happened? How good are your kids at following those rules when you guys are at home?
Good.
They are.
I feel like, I don't know if my kids are quiet, but I don't know. They're so busy. That, or they just go into their room and do whatever's happening in their room. So
you want to disclose your baseball issue or keep it private?
I don't mind disclosing it. It's just I don't know where it just happened yesterday. So his select coach was like, it's time to choose because he pitches and he catches. Shut up, Bobby. And
I thought he was gonna say baseball or softball.
He's just like, it's time to choose which one you want to do. And that's a big thing because he's 14. I think my thought is he a little bit too young to decide? Because, I mean, he has, I don't even know, has he stopped growing? I don't know. Is he better today as one or the other? Yeah, I've got my take on that. And I think that he's better. I think he likes doing the one better than the other. And I think he's better at the one he doesn't like doing as much.
Mm. Do you think if he picks pitching or catching that the school needs to notify you? Or can they just handle that with the kid behind your back and everything?
Now, it's a great question. This is not his school coach, but I appreciate what you're trying to do.
What was your opinion?
I told him that one of the kids that I played with growing up since about 10 years old to 18 was Jason Jennings. Well, he is from... West Mesquite, went on to Baylor. His junior year won the Golden Spikes Award, which is the Heisman Trophy. So he won the Heisman Trophy of baseball his junior year, went on to pitch for the Colorado Rockies, and became just a pitcher. But he was a pitcher DH at Baylor. He couldn't do both. But throughout his whole high school career, select ball, we were one of the best select teams in the nation. He caught and he pitched. Now, what he had to do was he had to catch on Saturdays. And then he would pitch on Sundays because you don't want to put a kid after throwing, let's say, 6 or 7 innings, 100 pitches. You're not going to put him behind the dish the next day. I believe Choppy's kid I've seen him pitch one time. My dad has done lessons with him. He's talented enough that if you pressure this coach, he won't want to lose him. So you say, look, if you want to make him just a catcher, there's plenty of other programs.
NIL, baby.
That
NIL.
I believe he can do both. He wants to do both. If your kid doesn't want to do both, that's a different thing. But if your kid wants to do both, you tell him you're going to catch him on Saturdays and you're going to pitch him on Sundays. If you need him to DH or play first base on the other Sunday games, if we play more than one Sunday game, which you're hoping you're on a team that does, then on the other Sunday game, like, he pitches game one on Sundays every time. He throws his 5 to 7 innings, and then he either DHs or plays first base the rest of Sunday. He can't catch, but he can catch one day on Saturday for you. He loves doing it. He wants to catch one whole game.
Do you view this as a refreshing, at least, even though it's like kind of a pressure situation, he's looking out for your kid more individually versus like the team? Because wouldn't it benefit the team for him to just do both?
Yeah, probably would, unless he's not progress, unless he's like, so unless doing both keeps him from excelling at maybe the one.
Like, is he presenting this as the better option for your kid, like to play college somewhere, like focus on one, become better at one? He's looking out for him versus he's like the team.
The training is different, right, Mike? I mean, to train to catch, you're working out different muscles, right? If you're gonna pitch, you're doing, you know, different type of working out. You're doing more cardio. You're doing some weighted balls or whatever. Catching, you're working on more strength and stuff.
I'm still trying to figure out. I had conversations when I was on the last couple road trips with some people. I still don't know about weighted balls for kids. I still get different answers.
Yeah. Because you want to throw them backwards, right? You don't want to throw them forwards.
I don't know. That's a good question to ask. I don't know. Obviously, you would say like Driveline, who I would say is the leader in doing a lot of these.
Tommy Johns.
Possibly, yeah. But also the leader in getting the most velocity out of whether it's a kid or an adult, whether it's a professional or whether it's a grade school kid. They get the most results, yet there are possibilities of hurting that person more by trying to get the most velocity out of them at an early age. But let's be honest. If you talk to whether it's Slosh now at UT or you talk to these coaches that are Division I coaches, if you're right-handed and you're not touching 90 miles an hour at 17 years old, they pretty much, I'm not saying all the time, but most of the time they say, go to a junior college and figure out how to throw 90 miles an hour or above if you're right-handed. So that's the tough part as a parent. If your kid really wants to become a Division I player, which I think both of our kids do, there has to be the ability to touch 90 miles an hour or harder by the time they're 17 years old.
All right, Kevin and Bobby, I saved this for you two. It's unfortunate news to bring you.
Is this the thing you wrote down and circled just now?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe.
Oh, by the way, Petit. Sorry, he went to Petit, not West Mesquite. Jason Jennings, Mesquite Petit, as somebody on the YouTube corrected me.
Oh,
that's correct.
You were calling Choppy's kid Petit.
He's 10.
There is some evidence out there that may suggest that RJ Choppy was right in the debate that we had about 2 weeks ago over Adrian Wojnarowski and being an insider, because the latest suggestions are that Jeff Passan may move into Woj's role, and then the latest one is Adam Schefter.
I'd heard that.
May move into Woj's role, and Choppy, I think that makes you look pretty good in your statement that it is not about the hardworking insider. It is the spotlight. It is the platform. It is the position, because Schefter and Passan could just become NBA insiders.
Do you think Woj just like leaves his magical SIM card or Rolodex?
My assumption is he would leave like the code.
Okay.
Right, or whatever.
To unlock everything.
So Schefter does have like strong contacts in those other two sports. Like in Major League Baseball and NBA, he does like keep strong.
He's supposedly some NBA diehard.
Like he's very much like a
because doesn't it boil down to this, like creative arts? Give me an agency.
CAA. Yeah.
CAA. They have NFL players. They have NBA players, but it's still under the same bosses. Schefter's relationship to break these stories most of the time comes from agents, so that those agents would just give him. The same people would give him the info on a different sport?
So there's agencies, obviously, because like there's not a lot of dual agents. In fact, I don't know if there are any who do NBA and NFL, but like the agencies themselves, yeah, he's developed enough relationships. He probably knows a lot of the NBA agents at various groups, CAA or, one of the other ones I can't come up with right now. But
what about Passan?
Passan, I don't know. I don't know what his relationships might be.
Yeah, because like,
Now there is definitely going to be
no one's going to say, oh man, I can't wait to hang out with Jeff. He's not cool, right? He's not a cool guy.
No, he's definitely not cool.
He's not cool. So he didn't have the cool factor. So There's
did
no
Woj?
Reason that
yeah. what? Woj didn't either though, right?
Woj didn't have the cool factor either.
There's definitely
what's your point in that?
Well, like, so nobody wants to hang out with him, so he's not like this some great schmoozer. He's not cool. It'd be cool to be a schmoozer.
Like I said, there's when we brought this
John
up,
Clayton.
I don't know. There was something
a ponytail when he played guitar.
Yeah. Maybe it was that commercial I saw with his
ponytail,
mom.
Man. Yeah. He rocked a sleeveless suit.
I would say, I don't know, I can call my agent and see.
Oh,
is
well.
they obviously give information to Woj or they give information to Passan because they want the player's perspective or the agent's perspective. They want to get that story out. So it's not just the owner's story and the owner's perspective is, I guess Woj probably calls up a lot of his NBA guys and says, hey, you know, I'm leaving. I'm done to work through me.
But Shams.
I'm telling you, like, Jeff Passan is a great guy, and they're kind of like maybe on a three-way call and just making sure that, like, hey, I'm telling you, you can trust him. He's done this. And then you can call up this agent in baseball or that agent in baseball.
Okay, so hand me down.
Hey, have you had any problems or have you had great relationships with this guy? Because if I start giving him the information that my guy wants to be, let's say in the NBA, traded, he doesn't want to play for the New Orleans Pelicans anymore or the Milwaukee Bucks or whatever, that he's going to present it in a way that it doesn't out us, out me, out him, and then that it's presented in a way that looks favorable to the player.
Like, isn't Rappaport, like, what was when he first started at the end of there, everybody was like, he was always wrong. Remember, that was the knock on him. It was always right. It was always wrong. But the NFL never created him.
No. So here's the thing is that when you there's some of it that naturally comes with the outlet. You are giving information to the outlet, and this is just the vehicle to which you give that information so that it's reported. That's some of it. But if you're telling me Shams and Woj and then pick random NBA reporter from anywhere, like I don't know, or random NBA analyst, you put Peter Vesey in that job, like they're not getting the same story. Like two of those guys are going to do that job a lot better than the other, even with the same ESPN access. Some of it, yes, is just defaulted to let me give it to the ESPN person, and that's the platform I want to give it to. But then what you do past that is what like separates.
Yeah, I believe that.
All right, so I don't know if you're right. I retract. I take it all back then. Tomorrow.
I'm always right, okay? I'm never wrong.
Tomorrow, Mike McCarthy and Tony Dungy. Final State Fair ticket giveaway.
Which one of those interviews do you think is going to go better tomorrow?
Tony Dungy.
It's just like anything.
Although we're going to ask Mike a lot about Pittsburgh, where Bobby should go in Pittsburgh. Let's see if he directs you to a real place or like a desert. For Bobby Belt.
To his bar.
And there's a guy waiting there with a shovel.
Exactly. Yeah. Mike McCarthy and Tony Dungy, final State Fair ticket giveaway. The KNC Masterpiece next on The Fan.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.